We'll unravel a mystery this hour. It's called Mystery Babylon. But first, a national security update.
So it was difficult for them to assimilate with the culture. To top it off, their ideology, their Islamic religion, they came from devout Islamic cultures, forbid them to assimilate. Look, there are so many different people from different cultures and different religions that immigrate to France and to different countries around the world. How come they assimilate?
This is Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell. Jan begins today's broadcast with a conversation with Brigitte Gabrielle. Later this hour, she'll meet with author Bill Salas. Our first guest is a Lebanese-American, a conservative journalist, an author, an anti-Islam activist, as well as the founder of the nonprofit group Act for America, Brigitte Gabrielle. Here now is Jan Markell.
And I am so pleased here to move into a segment of the radio broadcast today. And let me just set the stage by saying that probably somewhere between 200 million and 300 million Muslims are radicalized, and the free world should be very concerned about that, folks. So I like to bring on the scene every now and then, hopefully once a year and sometimes more if possible, the expert on that. And you've heard her, you've seen her on YouTube, on Fox News, on various other media outlets. You've seen Brigitte Gabrielle, Act for America. I began getting acquainted with Brigitte over a decade ago as she was just getting going in the early 2000s with the organization known as Act for America. We're going to give you contact information and other information as we move along in this segment. Brigitte Gabrielle, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jen. I'm delighted to be back with you.
Brigitte, how do you see national security advancing here? We're just over a year now into the Trump administration. Are you encouraged? Are you discouraged? Tell me what you're seeing.
I am encouraged because we have a leader at the White House right now who's basically pretty much the only leader in the free world right now.
That's right.
Who has the backbone to say what needs to be said, something most leaders around the world are afraid to say, and that is our civilization is at war with radical Islam. We are at war with radical Islam. And President Trump is undoing all the damage that Obama has done to the country. President Trump is removing the shackles around the ankles of the FBI and the first responders and our intelligence community and empowering them to do what they need to do to protect our communities without political correctness. And because of that, I am encouraged and feeling better about the state of our national security because our enemies know it. There is a new sheriff in town, and they're going to think twice before messing with the United States.
Okay, what about a wall? Southern border. Let's just talk that for just a minute here, because I know you share the concerns of many Americans that some who are coming across the southern border are Islamic extremists. There's all sorts of evidence for that. Clearly, a wall would be a tremendous help. Give me your thoughts on that.
We need the wall. The wall is non-negotiable. And I am so glad to see that the president right now is putting his foot down and saying, no wall, no nothing. And this is exactly why he was elected by the American people. And when you look at the different polls and the different research that have been done around the country, most Americans agree with the president on securing our border and reinforcing our immigration laws. We know, Jen, for years, you and I have been talking on the radio for at least 10 years.
That's right.
We know that terrorists have been working with the drug cartels on the Mexican border, paying top dollars to these money-hungry drug cartels who would sell their soul for the dollar to basically smuggle terrorists into the United States. They are so sophisticated that even our elected officials refer to them as OTM, Mexicans.
That's right.
The fact that they refer to it as OTM, other than Mexicans, says that we have many nationalities coming through the Mexican border. You add to that Hezbollah has a major operation in South America. Different terrorist organizations have wised up, like ISIS, Al-Qaeda before them, that if you can come to South America, America and work with the drug cartel, you can literally skip through into the United States through the Mexican border. Mm-hmm. Our enemy's not dumb. Yeah. And this is why we must protect ourselves and we must build that wall no matter what it takes. And I can tell you, my organization, Act for America, is committed to helping the president and mobilizing the grassroots to do whatever we can, putting pressure on elected officials nationwide to make sure they support the president in building that wall.
Mm-hmm. Brigitte is the author of a couple of books I'm very familiar with. One is called They Must Be Stopped. The other is Because They Hate, a Survivor of Islamic Terror Warns America. Learn a lot more at actforamerica.org, actforamerica.org. We're going to give you a little cheerleading lesson just a little bit later, folks, about getting involved in her organization. First, Brigitte, I want to ask you about a couple of other issues. Number one, I am thrilled almost out of my mind that there are more Christians now coming into America, fleeing the conflict in the Middle East, more Christians coming than Muslims.
The true persecuted minority.
Mm-hmm. The first months of Trump presidency, Christians accounted for much growing share of the U.S. refugee arrivals, according to Pew Research. A real cause for rejoicing.
Absolutely, because, you know, under Obama, he wanted to bring majority Muslim. You know, over 70% of the people that we brought into the United States were all Muslims, especially in the last year. As a matter of fact, last year of the Obama presidency, he wanted to make sure we bring as many Syrian Muslims as we can, that he even sent a team to Jordan to speed up their screening, you know, that so-called screening, the joke of a screening, mm-hmm. to rush them to come to the United States before he leaves office. Well, Trump came in and he changed all that. Because, let's face it, it is the Christians in the Middle East who are being persecuted and killed for their religion. It's the Christians who are suffering and being expelled from Syria, from Egypt. Look what they're doing to them on Egypt, on the holiday. Every holiday we hear about the bombings and the slaughter.
Right.
Those are the people that we need to bring in. Look at the Iraqi Christians. I mean, here we brought in all these Muslim Iraqi refugees. What about the Christians? Almost a million Christians left Iraq ever since we invaded Iraq and killed Saddam Hussein. So I'm glad to see that we are bringing more Christians to America, because if we're going to bring refugees into the United States, let's start by bringing people who share our values, who share our principles, who share our understanding of how things should be done, who will be more likely to assimilate into our society without any problem. They're bringing people who don't share our values.
Brigitte, do you think that the Muslim Brotherhood will get labeled as a terror group? So many of us have wanted this for so long. I don't see it in motion yet. What do you think?
Well, we are working on that behind the scenes, I can assure you. As a matter of fact, just last week, I was working with Senator Cruz back and forth with his office all week long. Act for America is launching a massive direct mail campaign to alert citizens nationwide about the importance of passing the Muslim Brotherhood bill nationwide. For those who are not on our mailing list, I encourage you to go to actforamerica.org and sign up to receive our information, because what we're going to be doing with our direct mail piece and educating the public as to why we must designate them as a terrorist organization and get people to call their elected officials. We are writing instructions on what you can do in calling your elected officials, whether senators, whether in Congress, to push them to designate the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization. So there is work on it, Jen, behind the scenes, but right now, because of all the issues that are coming in one after the other, I mean, bless Trump's heart. I mean, the poor man, he has not been able to take a breath. He's always putting out one fire after another from
the day
he stepped into office. So once things, you know, calm down a bit, you'll be hearing more in the next few months about the Muslim Brotherhood and its designation.
Talking to Brigitte Gabrielle for this segment. Again, learn a lot more at actforamerica.org. Brigitte, I have heard you say, kind of quoting you here, Europe waited too long. Now, let me add to that. I mean, I think the sun is setting on Europe. Her churches are now mosques. Her people are now afraid. Jews in Europe, in some parts of Europe, particularly Germany, must be accompanied by police just to carry out daily routines. Jews in France are fleeing to Israel because of what's happened to Europe. And, you know, America could easily make the same mistakes that Europe has made. I don't think it's too late for America, do you?
It is not too late for America. Now is our time to organize and make sure we learn lessons lessons from what's happening in Europe. You've heard me say this before, Jen. Europe is at stage 4 cancer. It's too late for them right now to turn around. America is at stage 2.
Yes.
We can still operate. We can still take out the cancer that is growing within us. Thank God we have Trump right now who has no compunction about operating and taking out terrorist cells operating in the country and shipping them overseas or expelling them from the country. He will deal swiftly with that. But this is our time. This is our time to see that what's happening in Europe is a preview as to what's coming to the United States. And that's why we must be organized. And a lot of people tell me, Jen, you know, Brigitte, you know, I understand the issue. I am so frustrated, but I feel helpless. What is my voice going to do? I do not know what to do. I do not know how to be active. I do not know how I can make a difference. And I tell people, we teach you how to make a difference. Join us. I started Act for America to empower Americans and mobilize them to learn how to make a difference in their community. Go to our website, actforamerica.org, and we named the organization Act for America. Think about America, not wish for America, not hope for America, not pray for America. You can do all the above, but without taking action, nothing happens. Go to actforamerica.org. Join us. Sign up to get our emails and action alerts. Sign up to start a chapter in your community. We want people starting chapters. Start a chapter. We will guide you. We will hold your hand. We will teach you how to hold a meeting. We will teach you what to do in your community. And here's the good news. We started Act for America, our chapters, in 2007. I'm so proud to tell you, Jen, that today we have passed almost 100 bills nationwide. 13 bills in Congress and over 82 bills on the state level in different states supporting national security. So everyone can make a difference. We have chapter leaders who started, you know, housewives working
That's
in
right.
their home, mothers, started Act for America chapter in their breakfast nook, inviting their 4 neighbors sitting around the breakfast nook. Today, some of their chapters are in the hundreds. So if you're listening to this broadcast and wondering to yourself, what can I do? How can I make a difference for the country? Our country needs you. Go to actforamerica.org and join us. Sign up to lead a chapter, especially if you have any activism experience.
Yeah, I would second that, folks. And, you know, I headquarter out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. We've got an active Act for America organization here in the Twin Cities, and started by a very ordinary person. You don't have to be highly skilled in security issues. You just have to care about your country and then act. So do as Brigitte suggests. Check out actforamerica.org. All the info you're going to need at that website.
We need
Go ahead.
To do, Jen, what the left does.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the left is so organized. They have small groups. They've got you know, people inviting their neighbors for coffee or tea at 7:30 in the evening. Get your friends together. Have some hors d'oeuvres. Watch a video. Stick a video about what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
We will provide you with information. We will send you a kit once you decide to do something like that, teaching you exactly what to do. Have everybody signed up and say, you know what? We're forming our own group, you know, and start with your immediate friends. And then we can notify you when there is bills coming down for a vote so you can call your elected official. It doesn't take more than 2 minutes of your time. Can you imagine if you start a group with 4 or 5 people sitting in your breakfast nook or in your family room, and then each one reaches out to 2 of their friends, and the 2 of their friends reach out to another 2. Before you know it, within 6 months period, you have a chapter of at least 200 people all making phone calls to your elected officials and all participating and making a difference in your state. That's how we make a difference. That's exactly how the left is doing it. On our side, we listen to the radio, people listen to talk radio, people watch the news and shake their heads in absolute frustration, yet they don't take action. We are helping you and teaching you how to take action. Join us.
Brigitte, I'm intrigued by a new book you're writing. And the reason I'm intrigued is we were talking off air, and you're very well aware that I live in a part of the country known as Little Mogadishu, and that's, you know, Minnesota. We have many, many Somalis here. It could be up to 100,000. I'll just be upfront with my audience here. I pay thousands and thousands of dollars at my annual conference because we are secure at my annual conference. We have, up to 20 policemen hired that they leave no stone unturned when it comes to security. But I say all that because this part of the country is particularly plagued with a lot of terror ties. Take a couple of minutes and talk to my audience about what you're writing and the connection that it actually has, because you're more than aware of the situation here in Minnesota.
The situation in Minnesota is so concerning, but unfortunately, the majority of people around the country have no idea how what is happening in Minnesota and how the Somali community is basically the largest terrorism harboring community in America. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought we're going to be talking about, you know, most people think about ISIS, you know, and all of these things, but most people don't realize that out of the Somali community in Minnesota alone, there are over 42 members who are now fighting overseas with terrorists. The first American suicide bomber that was killed as an American citizen is a Somali refugee from Minnesota. The attacks are unbelievable. And I'm detailing some of that. I'm writing a new book, Jan, and my new book is titled Rise, In Defense of Judeo-Christian Values and Freedom. So the title is Rise. The subtitle is In Defense of Judeo-Christian Values and Freedom. It's a battle cry for Americans to wake up and realize we must come together now. It is vital that we come together now for the sake of the future of our country, for the future of our children. Because Europe is lost, we are the last man standing. No one has the strength that we have to stand up and defeat the free world. Australia doesn't have our strength. Canada doesn't have our strength. New Zealand doesn't have our strength. Nobody has our strength. England doesn't have our strength. America is the last man standing. We've got to come together. And I lay out in the book what's happening in Europe and what's happening here in America. And I discuss actually Little Mogadishu or you know, Minnesota in my community, and the influx of the refugees and the settlement that has taken place around the country here in different parts of the country, and the effect of immigration. Most people don't realize that immigrants and their descendants right now accounted for 72 million in U.S. population growth from 1965 to 2015. They are projected, immigrants and their descendants, if we stay on the same track, to make up 88% of the growth of America by 2065.
Wow.
88%. Most people don't even know these numbers. They will be shocked. That means after you and I are gone, Jen, and after many of our audiences are gone, our children and our grandchildren are going to be living in an America that is going to be unrecognizable. Mm-hmm. And these numbers are according to the Pew Research.
Yeah.
This is not Brigitte Gabriel or Fox News or President Trump.
When does your book come out?
My book comes out September 11th,
yep.
2018.
Okay. We will talk next fall once that comes out, because I'm going to be very, very interested in that book. Folks, again, the contact for all of this is actforamerica.org. You've seen Brigitte. I'm sure many of you have seen her in the media as she's speaking into, commentating on whatever the security issues are, not just around America, but frankly around the world. And as she says, and she says it boldly, she says it unashamedly, we are at war. And how many political leaders are willing to say that? I guarantee you, Justin Trudeau will never say it. Emmanuel Macron will never say that. All sorts of people will never say that. I think Donald Trump might. He probably already has. Brigitte, we will stay in touch. I want to have you back when that book comes out. I am extremely interested in it. I want to thank you for all you do. Again, actforamerica.org.
Thank you.
Look it up, folks. Become an activist. Here's the perfect opportunity. We'll stay in touch.
Thank you very much.
All right, Brigitte. Goodbye now.
Okay, Jen. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. I appreciate your support.
All righty.
Okay, take care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye now.
If you're looking for resources about discerning the days in which we live, visit our website, olivetreeviews.org. There you'll find archived radio programs, current news headlines, and you can sign up to receive a podcast of every radio broadcast we produce. You'll find it all when you click on to olivetreeviews.org. To order your own compact disc recording of today's broadcast, just call 763-559-4444. For information on today's guest, Brigitte Gabriel, visit her website at actforamerica.org. Thank you for tuning in. This broadcast is a partnership between our media team and you. This is a listener-supported ministry. You can help us financially when you send your tax-deductible gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Jen returns right after this.
We have our fall annual conference this year, September 29th, 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., Grace Church, Eden Prairie, Minnesota. Speakers include Amir Sarfati, Pastor J.D. Farag, Pastor Jack Hibbs, and Pastor Billy Crone. We have had crowding issues for 2 years, so to remedy that, we are ticketing our 2018 event. Get pen and paper ready for a toll-free ticketing number, or go to olivetreeviews.org for more ticketing information. You can order tickets from Brushfire Online Ticketing. Just call them at 888-338-5338. That's 888-338-5338. Best not to call Olive Tree Ministries, but info is at our website, olivetreeviews.org. The event will be live streamed at no cost. Watch our website and newsletters for details.
This is Understanding the Times Radio, your trusted voice for interpreting current events through a biblical worldview.
This is Jan Markell. Say, I'm so looking forward to speaking at Pastor J.D. Farag's Church, Calvary Chapel, Kaneohe, Hawaii, Sunday, March 4th, 8:30 and 10:45 a.m. I'll be talking about current issues of the day and how they apply to the Bible, because today's headlines are harbingers of our redemption and His return. I'll hope to meet some of my Hawaii listeners March 4th, Calvary Chapel, Kaneohe. You can catch all messages given on YouTube after those dates.
Passages related to Mystery Babylon, which really primarily takes us to Revelation 17 and Revelation 18. And it talks about this dual system, a double jeopardy that mankind hits after the rapture, a religious system primarily in Revelation 17, and then a commercial system in Revelation 18. And it's centered around a city. We find this great city shows up in both of these chapters.
Understanding the Times continues with a focus now on Bible prophecy and a conversation with Bill Salas. Bill has appeared on major Christian television networks. He's a conference speaker and a best-selling author of Psalm 83, The Missing Prophecy Revealed, How Israel Becomes the Next Mideast Superpower. Bill's with us today to unpack the meaning behind the term Mystery Babylon. Once again, here's Jan Markell.
And welcome back. Remember, I try to stay in touch with you. I do a print newsletter and e-newsletter. Sign up at olivetreeviews.org. The program is posted to my website Saturday morning, olivetreeviews.org, every Saturday. But you can sign up for the oneplace.com mobile app and get the program downloaded to that every Saturday morning. I'm moving on here now in the program. And let me just set the stage for my next guest by making a couple of introductory comments. I am aware of what is becoming almost, well, a spirited debate for sure, over the city referred to in the Bible as Babylon. And we also hear it referred to as Mystery Babylon, Revelation 17, 18. Physical city of Babylon was originally built by Nimrod after the flood, and it was located on the Euphrates River about 55 miles south of Baghdad. And the name Babylon came from the Tower of Babel that was constructed there. The prophecy of Jeremiah clearly states that Babylon would be destroyed, never to be inhabited again. And the book of Revelation prophesies the destruction of Babylon at the time of Armageddon. I want to unpack this in the time we have left. And to help me do that, I've invited a familiar voice and name, Bill Salas. We'll give his website a little bit later. Bill, welcome back to the program.
Jan, thank you. What an honor. It's always great to be on your show.
Thank you. Mystery Babylon, Bill. First of all, is it a literal city? Is it an institution such as the Vatican? And if it's a city, which city? You and I feel it's Rome. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, it's definitely a city. It's a great city. Various places, Revelation 17, 18 talks to us about the fact that it's a city. Now, it's a headquarters of a world religion. And we pick up most of the details of what we typically would call the harlot world religion in Revelation 17. It's an idolatrous place. It comes in on the scene at a time when the world is in total disarray in the end times, a way to sort of be an opiate for the masses. Some of the details of this harlot, and then we'll get into those five candidate cities, is it rules over many nations, and that's in Revelation 17, 15. It's headquartered in the city, Revelation 17, 18. Located on seven hills, which is a clue to the mystery of Babylon. It's called Mystery Babylon. It panders to the political leaders, because in Revelation 17, 2, it says that they're committing fornication with her. It's the opiate of the masses in the same verse, because the peoples of the world are, says they're drunk with the wine of her fornication. Now, that deals with idolatry. When we talk about that word fornication, we're not talking about, you know, a sexual adulterous type of thing. We're talking about a spiritual idolatry. It's martyred believers in the past. See, this is what's dangerous about this harlot world religion. It has blood on its hands, and that's in Revelation 17:6. And it also says it'll be drunk with the blood of the saints and the martyrs of Jesus in the future.
Okay.
So one of the concerns we want to reach.
Let me interject here, because I've heard you say, because I've heard your teaching on this, Bill. I'm talking to Bill Salas for these next two segments. And I've heard you say that there are two stages of the Roman Empire. There was pagan Rome, and that killed Jesus, martyred Christians for centuries, perhaps 200,000 killed over a million Jews back then, destroyed the temple in Jerusalem, destroyed Jerusalem again in 135 AD. Then there's another phase, you call it Papal Rome, Constantinople, the Vatican. They expelled Jews from Spain in 1492. They expelled them from Portugal. Hundreds of thousands of Protestants, perhaps millions, were killed. The point is, your point is, when I hear you talking about this, God is going to judge a city, and Rome is a good candidate for being judged because of her past evil. Am I right?
Well, correct. You know, because, you know, he judged Sodom and Gomorrah and other places. Is Rome going to get a free pass? You just read just a small rap sheet of the crimes of the city of Rome, starting with pagan Rome, which then, of course, as you said, morphed into Papal Rome as the Roman Empire collapsed. And of course, now that burgeoned into Roman Catholicism is where we've got to go with that. And it's clear that God is going to judge this city. It says in Revelation 18:5, in one translation I like, it says, "For her sins are piled as high as heaven, and God has remembered her crime." So we're not only dealing with the spiritual idolatry that Satan will use to dupe humanity in the end times, we're dealing with the fact that it's got crimes and sins that is perpetrated on Jews and Christians throughout time. So that's a very good point, Jan.
Okay, well, and I have heard you say, and I think this is almost a quote from you, that for 2,000 years, Satan has been preparing something. What he has been working with for 2,000 years throughout the church age, Rome, the Vatican, the Catholic Church, has been more guilty of spiritual harlotry, even in the church age. And then you refer, and we'll get there in just a moment, and you refer to some of the Marian apparitions, you refer to some of the Eucharistic miracles, and I'm going to come back to that. But before I go there, first I want to talk about some other options, because we've got friends who are talking about other options. Some are saying that Jerusalem is Babylon. Some are saying that literal Babylon in Iraq is the place. Some are saying New York City. Joel Richardson just came out with a book that it's Mecca. Why do you feel Jerusalem is not Babylon?
Right. And again, let's caveat this. When we deal with mystery Babylon, because it's a mystery, it's going to be a reality someday, and that generation, which I believe is coming quick if we're not it ourselves, is going to see the reality, and it will no longer be a mystery to them. But because it's a mystery at this point, there are five candidate cities, like you mentioned, and we have to take a look at those closely, and I believe some of those arguments are pretty good for some of those cities. Some are pretty weak, but my emphasis will always be that the arguments for Rome, going back with the church fathers and the Protestant reformers and our contemporaries today, are so powerful that I think it sways the body of evidence in the direction of Rome. Now, Jerusalem, now this is not a very popular view, but I'm going to address it. It's one of the main problems of this view, in a nutshell, is that when end times Babylon, Jan, is finally destroyed, we're told, as you quoted in Jeremiah, also in Revelation 18:21 and elsewhere, that it will be thrown down and will never be found anymore. Now, Mystery Babylon has an expiration date. It won't exist during the millennium. So this would contradict heavily like Jeremiah 3:17 and elsewhere, which declares that during the thousand-year messianic kingdom period when Christ reigns, that the throne of the Lord will be established in Jerusalem. Now, how could this even be possible if it's been destroyed forever and can never be found again? So there's other arguments. Again, it's not the most popular view, but that one right there to me is sort of, I'd say, almost a kill shot. So
okay. Well, one that is popular is New York City or Washington, D.C., or America in general, and talk to me about why you do not feel that any of these would be mystery Babylon.
Okay, well, actually, we can kind of identify them one by one, but in kind of a nutshell with New York City, one of the problems it's facing is that, and again, that's a little more modern view, because America's only been around a few hundred years, right, Jan? So this doesn't go back to the time of John, et cetera, the apostle. But New York City, it doesn't sit on seven hills. And so some of the subscribers of this theory have had to broaden the interpretation to read that it sits among seven continents. And this is not what the verse says, the Greek word that John uses for hills. Which, of course, Rome was commonly called the city that sits on seven hills back during his time and throughout time. It's Oros, and in strong concordance, it can either mean hills or mountains, but not continents. And the other argument that I think people need to look at closely here is that when end times Babylon is finally destroyed, to be found no more, we're told in Revelation 18:20 that the holy apostles are vindicated. And the verse 18:20 reads, "Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her," addressing the apostles of the time of Jesus. And this seems to require, in my estimation, that at least two or more of these original apostles, Jan, had to have been killed by the governing authorities that end times Babylon will represent. This would immediately eliminate, of course, New York City, Mecca, Babylon, because none of the holy apostles were killed in these cities. Now, Rome fits the description because the apostles Paul, Peter, Andrew, and James, the brother of Jesus, were all executed under the authority of Rome. So, again, we need a whole show to argue through these different points, but I think that's a pretty good description of my concerns about New York City.
Okay. In recent, I would say, I think, months now, perhaps certainly the last year, kind of a new theory came along that Mecca might be Mystery Babylon. And the one who's come up with this is your friend and mine, Joel Richardson. And there are other issues we don't agree with Joel on. He's certainly a good brother in the Lord, and we appreciate what he's doing for the cause of eschatology. Let me just play a real short clip of Joel, and he's talking about why he believes Mecca would be Mystery Babylon.
The book is broken up into three parts. The first part is the exegesis. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily verse by verse, but thematically. I work through the text very carefully, draw out all of the primary information that we need to identify Babylon. The second part of the book, I work through most of the primary popular interpretations. So, you know, Rome, Jerusalem, a literal rebuilt Babylon, New York City, the United States, the Vatican. I begin with a chapter called The History of the Mystery. And so this is where I survey the history of Christian interpretation of this prophecy. And it's interesting. So in the early years of the church, the primary opinion of believers seemed to be that the pagan city of Rome was Mystery Babylon. Of course, they lived under the shadow, under the dominance, the hegemony of the pagan Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. But as the Roman Empire essentially fell, as pagan Rome fell and it was Christianized, then that view lost favor. And so the next major opinion that we find in history is that it was Islam, is that Islam as a religion represented Mystery Babylon. We see that in some of the earlier commentaries that we have on Revelation. And then later, during the Reformation, the church sort of went back and picked up the idea of Rome, except now they shifted it to the Vatican. So no longer pagan Rome, but now Roman Catholic, the Roman Catholic Rome. And so this became the dominant position really for the last 500 years since the Reformation.
Bill Salas, and that's who I'm talking to for the balance of the program. You can learn a lot more at his website, prophecydepot.com, prophecydepot.com. Bill, again, if we're talking about a global system, and Joel would say, okay, well, Islam is a global system, and again, he's got Mecca being Mystery Babylon, you would disagree.
Well, I would. As a matter of fact, because this could go on to a 3-hour debate, which indeed Joel
you,
and I
you had.
Easily
yeah.
had.
Yeah,
and,
you had.
And I would defer the attention to your audiences to that DVD. It's available at my site, prophecydepot.com. And it's a three-hour debate between Joel and I called The Identity of Mystery Babylon, Mecca or Rome. No one's ever debated this, the topic of Mecca. And so we get into the arguments, and he's absolutely right. The church fathers, Lactantius and Tertullian and Irenaeus and Jerome, they all believed it was Rome. The reformers, Martin Luther, John Knox, John Calvin, John Tyndale, John Wycliffe, they all believed it was Rome. Our contemporaries, J. Vernon McGee, Dwight Pentecost, Clarence Larkin, Dr. David Reagan, Tim LaHaye, Hal Lindsey, the list goes on, Dave Hunt, Mike Jenner, they all believe it was Rome. It is Rome. Myself included, you mentioned you do as well. When he, and by the way, I just want to say this because Joel and I are brothers. We're working together on the production of this DVD. It's really a good DVD. It just came out recently. You know, he shifts the attention in that clip you said to the dominant view then became Islam. And, you know, in the debate, I point out how I just don't technically agree with that. And at no point in the debate, and have I found anywhere where he actually admits, and he will say this, you don't really hear anybody say Mecca was the city. Now, when he starts to quote some things, he takes us back to the Ottoman Empire. But that basically was dealing with Turkey, you know, and dealing with the major cities there. So at this point, you know, the reason I've come forward and said I don't believe it's Mecca, main reason, which is pretty much, you can't find much people speaking about Mecca apart from Joel back in 2008 and Wally Chubot in their books, is that there's two Muslim wars coming, prophetic wars, powerful wars that will change the face of the world. And one of them is in Psalm 83, which is an Arab-Israeli conflict. It involves 10 Arab countries that surround Israel. They want to destroy Israel, that the nation can be remembered no more, the name of Israel. They're going to be defeated. That will put a punch to the gut of Islam. And then you're going to have, followed on the heels of that, Ezekiel 38, where you have nine populations spearheaded by Russia. In Ezekiel 38, most all of them, apart from Russia, are Islamic, and God's going to destroy that. And I believe these two wars happen before we get into the tribulation period. I put these things forward in my Psalm 83 book, The Missing Prophecy Revealed. And that's going to be an uppercut to the jaw for Islam, so that by the time we get to the tribulation period, where the harlot's supposed to come into the scene, Islam, in my estimation, is going to be knocked down on the canvas for the 10 count. So that's one of the arguments of it forward in that debate.
How about the fact that it could be Babylon in Iraq, rebuilt Babylon in Iraq? At Mystery Babylon could be Babylon.
Correct. This is actually a pretty popular view right now. As a matter of fact, it was the view I held for a while until I looked closer into the Rome possibility. There's several problems with this theory in my estimation. First of all, Babylon today is not a great city. Mm-hmm. It would have to be rebuilt to meet this prophetic requirement. It would be an enormous undertaking and probably not likely, Jan, when going to happen when you consider that throughout modernity here, Iraq has just generally been ripped up as a war-torn zone. So, you know, but however, the subscribers to this, like Hitchcock and Joel Rosenberg, very noted names, they point out often that, well, Dubai was a great city, you know, built a great city in a relatively short period of time. So, you know, yes, that is possible. But the other problem I've got with the Babylon scenario is that this is a mystery. We're told in Revelation 17:5, Mystery Babylon, the great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. It doesn't read literal Babylon, the great, per se. So we have to deal with the mystery aspects of the city, and we find out what they are. An angel's talking to John in Revelation chapter 17:7-18, and he immediately takes John's attention to the location of the city. In Revelation 17:9, he says it's a city that sits on seven hills, which at the time that John wrote the prophecy was clearly representing Rome, which was often referred to as the city of seven hills. So also the imagery, Jan, of the seven hills was evident on ancient Roman coinage at John's time. There's a coin in circulation with an engraving of the goddess Roma pictured lounging on seven hills. And another telling clue in Revelation 7:18 is that of the woman you saw, it says, is the great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. And when you break down the verse, the woman you saw is past tense. So John saw this in his revelation as this world religion represented as woman, is in the present tense at John time, that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. And of course, that city was Rome. This would be real clear to John at that time. And then the third argument of my concern is that it was also a common practice at the time of John and the apostles to call Babylon as a code word for Rome. This was due to the severe Roman persecution. Okay. In fact, I'm going to quote Peter. He says in 1 Peter 5:13, she who is in Babylon with you, greet you, and so does Mark, my son. And so, you know, this was commonly understood that Peter was talking about Rome. So I would say, as I look at the list of the five candidate cities, I favor Rome for the arguments that I believe weighs the body of evidence towards Rome. But if I had to have a second option, and even Joel Richardson points this out on the debate, the second option would be Babylon, Iraq.
Okay. But the context of Revelation 17 and 18 is a global religion. And global religion could even be the New Age movement or the occult or Islam. But your position is that this global religion is none of those things. The global religion would be tied to Rome and the Catholic Church.
First of all, there's two things to be concerned about, because you mentioned the New Age, and that's an important thought when we talk about that, and that's growing in popularity.
Yeah,
as
it
well.
Is.
But what we have going on is that we're dealing with a harlot world religion, and when Satan comes forward and he has no longer restraint, we're told in 2 Thessalonians, he's going to move forward into a system that has to be well in place. He's not going to go, oy vey, what do I do now?
Yeah.
I've got no
it's
time.
It's in place.
You know? And it says that when he reveals his lawless one, the Antichrist, in that environment, when he's no longer restrained, it's going to be with supernatural signs and lying wonders according to all deceptive works of Satan. So we have to ask ourselves, what is set in place now for him to move in and embrace and employ?
And what are some of these deceptions? And I want to get into that in my closing segment, Bill, because I think it's fascinating, and I think you really have tapped into something here. We're going to get into perhaps how could the apparitions of Mary play into this, folks? How about the Eucharistic miracles? We'll talk about that when I come back. Don't go away.
Remember to order your own digital copy of today's edition of Understanding the Times. Phone 763-559-4444. Also, don't forget our Understanding the Times conference coming up this fall. Circle the date on your calendar, September 29, and plan to join us for this one-day special event. For more conference information, log on to olivetreeviews.org. Just one more reminder, this ministry is listener-supported. That means we depend on you to help keep this radio outreach on the air in your neighborhood. You can ensure that this broadcast continues to reach America with the inconvenient truth. You can help us by making a tax-deductible donation. Please mail your gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311.
Years ago, Understanding the Times radio began on one radio station in the Minneapolis area. We now air on almost 830 stations and around the world electronically. You made that possible. People really do want the inconvenient truth. Radio costs are substantial, so think about a tax-deductible gift to Olive Tree Ministries to keep this message alive. You can give conveniently online at olivetreeviews.org or by calling us at 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444, or just drop a check to Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. This is Radio for the Remnant, but let's help the remnant grow by giving them the truth each week on Understanding the Times Radio. Just a heads up to my Twin Cities and Upper Midwest audience listeners, there's a prophecy conference coming up in the Twin Cities at Revived Church, Saturday, March 24th. Saturday time will be 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., and the address is 7849 West Broadway in Brooklyn Park, formerly Brooklyn Park E-Free. Speakers, Pastor Tom Hughes, Pastor Mark Henry, and I'll be one of the speakers as well on Saturday. Call Revive Church for details. There's no cost. Lunch on your own at area restaurants. Free will offering. I speak once in the morning Saturday, once in the afternoon Saturday. Again, Saturday time, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., March 24th. And on Sunday with Pastor Mark Henry, the times are 9, 10, and 11 a.m. We'll hope to see you there. The church will provide CDs and DVDs about a month later. Contact Revive Church.
This is Understanding the Times Radio, now reaching across America with a message that does not compromise the truth of God's Word.
And it says that the Antichrist is in cahoots in this unholy church and state alliance. It says that initially he's in a subservient position. The harlot sits on the beast, the Antichrist, in Revelation 17:3, who carries her to her heights in Revelation 17:7. And then ultimately the harlot world religion will be destroyed so that the Antichrist can have his time in the sun.
You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. To wrap up her conversation with author Bill Salas, here again, Jan Markell.
Say, be sure to follow us on our Facebook page, Jan Markell's Olive Tree Ministries. Follow us on Twitter, Olive Tree Men. You want to be a CD subscriber? Get a CD of every program we do on Understanding the Times Radio. You need to call us on that, and we'll process that here in our office. If you write to me, would you always tell me what station you're listening to? That helps us process things here in the Olive Tree Ministries office. As I introed a segment ago, I am aware of what is becoming a very spirited debate, and that would be over the city of Mystery Babylon. We considered here in the last segment, is it Jerusalem? Is it Mecca? Is it literal Babylon in Iraq? Is it New York City? Is it all of America? And I think we have to rule those options out. I'm talking for the two segments with Bill Salas. Learn a lot more at prophecydepot.com. He's got products there that will be helpful. You know, we've carried some of Bill's products in the, over the years, his DVDs, his books. You will find a lot of products that will answer a lot of questions as it concerns the lateness of the hour. Excellent teacher, writer, teacher, etc. I've even shared a platform with him at the Prophecy Conference here in the Twin Cities 3 years ago, almost to the day. Bill Salas, here's where I want to go because our time is winding down and I want to give you the complete opportunity to say what needs to be said. I gave a little bit of a tease because we were up against the clock in my last segment that in fact, the Catholic Church, and you've referenced the signs and wonders and all that goes with Mystery Babylon, and we've got some things going on in the Catholic Church, and you and I have Catholic friends, and we're not here to be bashing them, and we need to clarify that. Am I right?
Well, absolutely. You know, that's the point. I mean, they do teach that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. What I'd like to do, Jan, is basically teach, let people know what they teach. Frankly, a lot of us don't know what they teach. And to be honest with you, there's quite a few Catholics who don't really understand exactly all the things about the Eucharistic miracles and the supernatural things and phenomena, how that plays into the whole teachings and thinkings throughout the church age of the Catholic Church. So I just emphasize some of their own quotes and what their catechisms are and that type of teaching.
Right, but how is this going to fit into the Vatican or Rome playing the role of Mystery Babylon? Because I've heard you give a teaching and you highlight the deceptions of the apparitions of Mary, the Eucharistic miracles tie into this. Talk to me about that.
Okay, well, let's start real quickly with the Eucharistic miracles because that'll be the shorter aspect. And the Mary apparitions we can dwell on a little bit there because those are really dominant. But the Eucharistic miracles, you know, that the Eucharist is basically the communion between, you know, recognizing Christ's sacrifice on the cross, the Mass, the Catholics would call it, you know, they take Mass with the elements of the bread and the wine. But it's a supernatural, mystical experience for them versus like your typical Protestants and things, your Baptists and things that take communion. So what happens is they believe that the priests, the Pope, the cardinals, the bishops, and can only be the qualified individuals within the Catholic Church can issue the Mass, which Catholics are required to take. If they don't, in their very own catechisms, it becomes a mortal or a grave sin, which can condemn them to hell if they don't do this on a frequent basis. And I've got quotes in my Apocalypse Roadbook on that, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. But here's a quote from the back cover of Joan Carol Cruz, who has a book called Eucharistic Miracles. And it's important to understand that these are a supernatural phenomena, and this is the point you were making at the close of your first segment. Satan is going to employ a supernatural phenomena that he can move into to deceive humanity. So here's what it says on the back cover of her book. On numerous occasions in the history of the Church, God has seen fit to offer miraculous visible proof of the Catholic teaching that the sacred words of consecration of the Mass, the bread, wine, and the altar are truly changed into the body and blood of Jesus Christ. Joan Carol Cruz's Eucharistic Miracles book recounts 36 such major Eucharistic miracles, and here's what she tells of hosts which have turned into visible flesh, hosts that have bled, hosts that have levitated, hosts which have manifested into mysterious lights, consecrated wine that has turned into visible blood. This is real phenomena. These have been scientifically proven and checked out. So these are miracles. Now, are they of God or are they of deception? And the Eucharist is such a big deal that often when I read this quote to people from J.C. Ryles, who was the first Anglican bishop of Liverpool, he was between 1816 and 1900, you could actually receive a death penalty during the Inquisition, the Catholic Inquisitions. Remember, the harlot is drunk with the blood of the saints.
Right.
This is Babylon.
Yeah.
And here's what he says. It's a short quote. The principal reason why our reformers were burned was because they refused one of the peculiar doctrines of the Romish Church. On that doctrine, in almost every case, hinged their life or death. If they admitted it, they might live. If they refused it, they must die.
Mm.
The doctrine in question was the real presence of the body and blood of Christ in consecrated elements of bread and wine in the Lord's Supper. I've got Catholic quotes where basically they say, listen, we are either the one true religion, and the way we treat the Eucharist is the right way, and they call themselves the one true church, of course, or we are idolatrous. I've got quotes from Catholic apologists who say that. It's no middle ground here. They're either the one true church or they are idolatrous, and they use the Eucharist as a point of contention on that.
Okay, we have the deceptions of the apparitions of Mary. And again, folks, what we're doing is kind of emphasizing the fact that we're talking about Mystery Babylon. That's who we've talked about for the last segment and this closing segment. Who is Mystery Babylon? Bill Salas and I and numbers of others, Tim LaHaye, Hal Lindsey, Jack Hibbs, so many others, Dr. Dave Reagan, believe that Mystery Babylon is Rome. And we can even bring in, we're bringing in the Vatican as it concerns tying into the topic of Mystery Babylon. There are going to be deceptions at play with Mystery Babylon. Bill, again, talk to me a little bit about the apparitions. I've done an entire program on the apparitions of Mary.
Okay, so we'll just summarize this in our closing minutes. And first of all, you know, what's happened really is the Catholic Church has idolized, you know, these apparitions and Mary, the Mother of Jesus. And certainly we all love Mary, the Mother of Jesus, but she says in herself in Luke chapter 1, that, you know, all generations around verses 44 through 50, you're going to pick this up, we'll call her blessed, of course, as the Mother of Jesus. But she goes on to say that her soul magnifies, my spirit has rejoiced in God my Savior. So she herself admits that she needs a Savior. Now, the Catholic Church believes that she has an immaculate heart. She is not only sinless because she was impregnated by the Holy Spirit, you know, to bring us Jesus, but also that she was born without sin. And so they came up with a point because it says in the Bible the wages of sin are death. Well, in 1950, Pope Pius XII came out and said, well, she never died. She assumed to heaven. Now,
Right. That's
why they can qualify the fact that she keeps popping up throughout the church age in these various places. I mean, this goes all the way through the church age. I mean, she's shown up in Fatima in 1917, in Zaytun, and between 1968 and 1970. And then you go back to Lourdes, France. Guadalupe, Mexico, was in 1531. Lourdes, France was in 1858. So this is a supernatural phenomenon. The question is this the real Mary, or is this, again, supernatural deception? So I don't have much time, but I've got a quote or two I want to read you.
Go ahead.
My concern is that it's she, the apparition, has left messages that actually talk about her. She's going to be seen throughout the world. Her best works are yet to come. Now, of course, she wants to be a co-redemptrix.
That's right.
A mediatrix and an advocate. In other words, mediate between man's salvation and his personal relationship with God. Let her get in the middle of that. Here's some important quotes with respects, like you've had late Jim Tetlow.
Yes, the late,
research
I did.
On this on your
That's
show.
Right.
Him and Roger Oakland and Brad Myers wrote a book, Queen of All, which is great research on this. It's available on Kindle, on Amazon. And here's just a couple quotes. This is the key. Healings and miracles and Catholic conversions have been reported at apparition sites around the globe. In addition, the apparition of the Blessed Virgin Mary has repeatedly announced that her most significant signs and wonders, are yet future. She admits that she has not yet revealed her full glory to the world. She predicts heavenly signs and wonders that the whole world will soon witness. And here's an actual quote from a visionary from Mary along that same line. It says, I wish to also tell you that before my apparitions end completely, there's more, Jan, before they end completely, I shall be seen by every denomination and religion throughout this world. I have been seen among all people, not for just a moment, but everyone will have a chance to see me. As I appeared in Zaytun, now that was just less than 50 years ago. She appeared for 2 years, off and on, and even Egyptian President Gamal Nasser saw it. Millions of Christians, Muslims, and atheists saw this. It was on. You can see it on YouTube, the Zaytun apparitions. But anyway, she goes, as I appeared in Zaytun, I shall appear again so everyone may see me. Pray and help my plans to be realized, not just here, but throughout the world. And, you know, Catholics are praying the rosary on a daily basis. They're called to do that. You know, the rosary was issued by this apparition, you know, back, I forget the exact date, around the 1400s or something like that. Tradition has it. So how convenient.
Okay.
You know? And there's 15 promises that come out of this apparition for doing the rosary. That basically, when you look at these 15 promises, and your audience can Google them, these are things that, and for the most part, only God can do. So she's putting herself on a level, whoever this she is, and I don't believe it's the real Mary, with the divinity.
Okay.
And so that's my concern.
Your position really is that the deception that's involved in Mystery Babylon would be some of the things that you're talking about here, the various things as it ties into Mary. We have a harlot symbolizing the false Church of Rome as well. If you can summarize why we have a harlot involved, please do.
Well, what happens after the rapture and Satan is no longer restrained, you pick that up in 2 Thessalonians 2, he comes forward with a supernatural deception with the ultimate goal to ensure the success of his seed, the Antichrist, on the scene. And the first thing that happens is this harlot world religion comes on to deal with the chaos that's going on in the world after the rapture. You have seal judgments and things like this. And it says that the Antichrist is in cahoots in this unholy church and state alliance. It says that initially he's in subservient position. The harlot sits on the beast, the Antichrist, in Revelation 17:3, who carries her to her heights in Revelation 17:7. And then ultimately the harlot world religion will be destroyed so that the Antichrist can have his time in the sun. Satan can put his closing arguments together in the second 3.5 years where no one will buy or sell. The Cashless Society of Revelation 13, unless they take a mark upon their right hand and their forehead, as a form of worship of this beast. So our concern when we put forward these works, Jan, and do these shows is to let unsuspecting humanity know that the minute the rapture happens, and that could happen at any given minute, it's imminent, it's a signless event, and when we see the whole world is going, all the prophetic signs are converging, we have to put the rapture right at the top of our forethoughts.
Yep.
And immediately in the aftermath, here comes these world religions and the two-legged thing with the harlot and the Antichrist. So I'm just telling people, look, you don't want to be left behind, whether it's Rome, whether it's Mecca, whether it's Babylon, whatever. These things are coming, and they're going to overtake the world with supernatural deception.
Folks, we've given you some warnings this particular hour. Learn a lot more at prophecydepot.com, prophecydepot.com. Bill Salas, I want to thank you. We'll do it again sometime in the very near future. Folks, I want to thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Be unto your name.
Thank you for joining us for today's Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell. Across America and across the World Wide Web, we continue to report current events from a biblical perspective. Every weekend, this broadcast comes to you at no cost, but it costs us thousands of dollars. As we produce and distribute this weekly media outreach, would you consider standing with us? With an ever-changing world, men and women of faith need to keep informed. They need to be aware of current events as viewed through the lens of Scripture. Week after week, Jan Markell brings you a compelling hour, pointing out the dangers in today's culture and bringing hope through faith in Jesus Christ. We're asking you to join us in this listener-supported ministry as our financial partner. Please write with your tax-deductible gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Contributions are also welcome at olivetreeviews.org, or by phone when you dial 763-559-4444. Don't forget, global updates with a biblical worldview are yours around the clock at olivetreeviews.org. We look forward to hearing from you soon. We appreciate your continued prayer support for Jan and her media team. Jan Markell returns next week with another information and inspiration-packed hour designed to help you understand the times.